Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to the Applied Human Design podcast. I am your host, Heather, and as always, I'm so happy that you are here spending a little bit of time with me today. So, today's episode is going to be a very fun and interesting one. We're going to be talking about something that obviously I have a big interest in, and I know that, well, I just think it's interesting in general. I don't necessarily know that you're interested in it, but obviously if you clicked on it, then you probably are. And that is the idea of, well, we're going to be talking about a few different like witchy or like energetic travel ideas. But I guess the main focus, we're going to talk about ley lines. We're going to talk about earth energy centers. We're going to talk about pilgrimage. So I want to talk a little bit about that, what that means in that. We will talk about astrocartography, and we'll see what else we get to. So, let's see, how am I, where am I? So today is Monday, is it? Yeah. Today's Monday, the 14th of August, on Thursday. So probably approximately when you're listening to this, I might release this Wednesday night, probably. So assuming you listen to it on the first day, then I will be flying back to Australia. So wish me luck. Like I've said before, it's a 25-hour flight. Belgrade to Athens, Athens to Abu Dhabi, and Abu Dhabi to Melbourne. Dreading it. Really trying to have a positive outlook, but unless you've ever done the Europe to Australia flight, then you just don't know. You don't know the pure torture being locked in that little thing. Of endless flight. But anyway, on a more positive sense, you know, I'm going to be home at the end of the week. I've already set up some play dates with my friends back home, which is very exciting. I'm really excited to just go to my favorite places and go to the doctors and figure out what on earth is going on with my health. In terms of health, I'm feeling a lot better. I have pretty much had 2 weeks, like since that day when I was really, really bad and just like knocking on death's door. I have rested so hard. Like, I have watched so much Modern Family. I'm about halfway through season 4. Like, I am just rocking through it. And yeah, just eating really well and not pushing myself. I have also been doing, this has been really fun. So if you've listened to my Venus retrograde couple of episodes, you know that a big thing that I did was I did a 21-day ritual. So kind of just like an intensive, you could call it like an intensive deconditioning process, but I was incorporating like energy work, magic, and like spell casting, as well as just journaling and self-reflection and shadow work, kind of all into one intensive ritual. And it was really incredible, and it shifted a lot of stuff for me and got me into just, I think, a different mindset, different way of looking at the world. And yeah, essentially it shifted a lot. And I decided to do another intensive ritual. Like, this is apparently the type of witchcraft that I am moving into, is just focusing on one area of life for like a really intensive period of time and pouring a lot of energy and like, yeah, just rearranging energy into that to create, I guess, like a lot of things shifting. Cause if I just kind of like, I find if I just kind of like dabble, then I never, nothing ever really changes, or like I kind of lose interest, or I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just like do this thing here and there. And I feel like I really need to, I'm someone who really needs to like focus on an area and feel like things are changing really quickly. So anyway, long story short, that's what I've been doing. I'm currently in the middle of I think I'm only a few days into a 9-day reigniting the magic in my business ritual. And this time I decided to, well, I was like, this is obviously such a fun thing, and being a 3-5, I like to share my process. So I have put what I've created, the ritual, and I'm sharing the ritual as I go, as like day by day, like step by step audio instructions or journaling prompts or like spell prompts or whatever it is that we're doing that I'm focusing on that day. I'm doing that on my membership for my members. So if you are not already a member, you are missing out on being spoiled, essentially. I really do spoil my members. There's so much stuff in there. So anyway, I'll link that in the show notes. You can check it out. Other than that, what is going on? Again, not really much. I've just been resting lots, getting ready, emotionally preparing for the big flight home. okay. So, oh, and that being said, I guess, like, with the whole rearranging the magic in my business, well, reigniting, not rearranging, I guess it's the same thing. Just clearing up the old, making room for the new, making it feel fun again, re-enlivening the spark of... Okay, because this is the way I see it, right? Without getting too deep into it, maybe I could do a whole episode on this, actually, to be fully honest, there's, like, a lot to say, but the way that I have sort of shifted to viewing it is that when you create a business, you are essentially creating a magical entity. You are creating something that didn't exist before and wouldn't exist if you weren't feeding life force energy into it. And so you kind of have to take responsibility for the life of that entity. Like, it's going to A, take on a life of its own, but it's also only taking on a life of its own based on the energy that you're feeding into it. Think of it like a child, right? It's like, yeah, you can give birth to a kid, but unless you feed it with energy, love, attention, food, nourishment, water, all the things that it needs to thrive, it's not going to be a very healthy kid, right? Think of your business the same way. So that's essentially what this ritual has been nourishing the spirit, the energy of my business, just in a way that it hasn't been since I've been traveling and I've been busy, and honestly in a way that I just haven't ever thought to do, because this is just a new way that I'm looking at my business. And so that being said, there's probably going to be lots of fun changes in like services and offerings and that kind of thing. So the best place to be is always Instagram and watching my stories. Like I've said, I try to get better at sending emails, but I'm not always the best. So yeah, my Instagram account will be linked below. And if you can't find it, then it's linked by my website too. Okay. So let's talk about travel. Let's talk about ley lines and earth energy centers and all these fun things. So I actually, like, I could not fully find where the idea of it, the earth having energy centers came from, like who kind of came up with that first. What I was able to find is the origin of the concept of like ley lines, which is what they're called in English. So there are a few, So the term ley lines itself was a name given to this idea. So the idea of ley lines is that there are essentially like, so in, let's say, traditional Chinese medicine, right? And you know how you have like meridians running through your whole body. So the idea is that the earth, right, being that the microcosm, our physical bodies, are just a smaller version of the macrocosm, being the earth, right, for example, that the earth also has this like interconnected web of meridians or lines of energy, veins of energy, you could say, flowing through, like flowing over the land, the ocean, all of that. The name ley lines, which is what we might recognize in, I guess, like, I don't know, like New Age spirituality type circles and whatever, was actually a name given to it by an English archaeologist. He was actually like a wannabe archaeologist. He's like me, like a hobbyist historian who wishes she was out digging up stuff. Funny story about that, actually. I remembered the other day, because I was just talking about how bad I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was a kid, and I still do. But I remembered, I'm talking months of my life when I was like 7 or 8 years old, I would spend in like my parents' backyard or like our backyard digging up these like old tiles. Like, I guess the previous house owners before us had buried buried their bathroom tiles when they'd done like bathroom renovation or whatever. And yeah, there's little like child me just like digging, like dusting off, like being like, Mom, look at the shape of this one that I found. Look at the markings on this one. Literally, right? It only stopped. Again, I think I did it for months. But then again, time gets kind of twisted when you're a kid. But the only reason I stopped was because I found this weird bug and I was like, This is scary. Anyway, so he was a kind of wannabe or like hobbyist archaeologist. And he was just like riding his horse around the English countryside sometime after the First World War. And I guess in his mind, he just saw these like lines come to life, right? So he was probably some sort of like intuitive without really having the words for it at the time. Because he's seen these lines come to life. And what he's essentially noticing, or like what made him notice it, was he noticed that towns and like important meeting places, maybe like marketplaces, churches, tended to follow these like straight lines that he could see. Like it's like they kind of like mapped themselves out. And so his belief, or like his hypothesis, was, well, you know, it kind of is like human nature that the quickest route between two places is just straight, like in a straight line. So that was his kind of working hypothesis, that these would be like, would have been like ancient or like old market trade routes, or like the routes that people would literally take to like get from one place to the next. And it's as these lines that are crisscrossing across the English countryside, I guess, at places where they meet, that is where you would typically find like market towns, right? And he's like, well, that makes sense that these meeting places, you'd have places of trade. Anyway, so that is really, really interesting. And you know, it kind of does make sense. Like if you do look at these, a lot of, and this is not just true of England, right? This is now true for all over the world, or at least like many, many places in the world. You can trace these straight lines where there does appear to be these like heightened human activity and also heightened religious activity mapped onto these like straight lines. And of course one could argue like, well, where you find heightened human activity, you're probably going to find heightened religious activity, because typical like meeting spots or market towns or gathering places of humans would be like markets and like either churches or temples or places of worship or whatever it is, right? Typically where you find humans, you're going to find their gods. Just that is how humanity has always been. But what is really, really, really interesting, so that's kind of like where the concept came into, I guess, like modern perspective, and that's at least the terminology that like spirituality today has adapted it from, in terms of like, yeah. But there are different cultures all over the world that have different names for these lines. So dragon lines is the terminology used by the Chinese people. Song lines is the word or the terminology used by the Aboriginal peoples of Australia. Irish communities, Irish people might be referring to them when they refer to fairy paths. And then also spirit lines was the terminology used by Incas. And I'm sure there are dozens more examples of like different cultures and belief systems that have their own terminology and this understanding that, yeah, essentially that, you know, there are these lines across the earth crisscrossing at various points and creating heightened like energy. For what reason they exist, I mean, well, I guess like what I said earlier of our bodies being a microcosm of the macrocosm, that's like one reason, like the inner is reflected in the outer. If we have energy flowing through our body, then also the earth has energy flowing through it. And like, how is this energy traveling? And how is this energy meeting each other? But all in all, it's just like really, really fascinating. Nobody knows exactly why. Like a lot of people, a lot of cultures have their personal beliefs around it. But there's no 100% consensus in this particular topic, which I find really fascinating. And so I guess it's up to you. Like, what do you feel the purpose of these lines are? But it is really interesting. Okay. What do I want to say next? Okay, so I've sort of already said this, but just to clarify, so the belief is that at places where lines cross, right, so where you have one line crisscrossing with another, you get a vortex, or you could say like an energy center. You get a place on this earth where there is heightened energetic activity, because you have these two meridians or two lines, veins of energy flowing in two separate directions, but meeting and mingling, right? And when you mix like two or more different types of energy together, you get these like meeting points. And yeah, what is really, really, really interesting is that a lot of these like meeting points are the locations of like religious sites or towns and just, yeah, places where people are drawn to. And oftentimes people will travel to these places of energetic significance without knowing that they are specifically like a vortex or like an energy hub, or a meeting place of ley lines, however we want to talk about it. But they will feel like, they will genuinely feel like, oh, the energy there was just really, really intense. And you'll often see like spiritual communities coming together at these meeting points, right? Because, yeah, well, I mean, there are so many people who will talk about these things as if like, oh, you have to have like a certain amount of strength to like, or like, I guess, ability to do shadow work, whatever it is. Like if you're going to live on a ley line, if you're going to live at one of these like meeting points of energy, because the energy is so intense that it will like mess you up, not like mess you up in a bad way, but it will just like get things moving. So people will use sometimes these energetic places to intensify their own magic. So to do rituals or to like charge your crystals in and things like that, right? Very simple, simple things. So that was something that I did when I was, when I went to Stonehenge and Avebury Stone Circles. I took my crystals and I even bought a couple of new ones like when we were there, because that is something that you will often find in these like, in the towns that these like energy hubs reside within, is there will be like so many metaphysical stores, so many crystal stores, witchcraft stores, all of that, which we love to see it. You could never have enough witchcraft stores as long as they're ethical and all of that. But anyway, so I bought a couple new crystals and yeah, just literally like meditating on the stones of Stonehenge and Avebury and just asking for some of that energy to be infused into my crystals to ground you or to aid in your manifestation or your practices in whatever way, shape or form, right? Again, it's up to you. If you are doing something like that, it's like, I think it's really nice to leave an offering to the earth, like obviously something that the earth would appreciate. So leaving, I don't know, a flower or another crystal or something like that. Okay, so let's actually talk about the earth having energy centers just like a human body, right? So this is the one thing that I could not find who originated this concept. Like obviously it is something that has probably come out of like New Age spirituality, but I couldn't find if it has roots or traces in a more like older practice or older belief system, right? Although that being said, like each of the places that we're going to go through that is said to align to a different energy center has been regarded as a very sacred, very like very like sacred and important place for the people who have lived on those lands for thousands of years. So you'll see what I mean as we go through. All right, so what we are essentially postulating is that just like a human has like a root energy center, sacral energy center, all of that, all the way up, that the earth also have these. So these energy centers are going to be places, typically places in the earth where you have not just a couple, but maybe multiple of these ley lines or energy lines crossing, right? So these are strong energetic vortexes across the earth. So they are going to be places where, yeah, I can imagine if you stayed for a while that you would really feel things moving, or they, well, with some, could end up being culturally significant to multiple different religions, and that having, that causing a lot of tension, right? Anyway, without further ado, let's go through them. Let's start from the Earth's root center. Okay, so the Earth's root center is said to be Mount Shasta, USA. So there will obviously be some of these that I know more about than others. This is one that I don't know much about. I know I have heard people talking about Mount Shasta, but I would be curious. So if you have been to any of these, feel free to tell me about your experiences there. Did you feel like an intense energy? I know that Mount Shasta is like a place where people go to buy crystals and stuff like that, which again, makes sense. That is something you'll see in a lot of these. okay. The sacral center of the world is said to be Lake Titicaca, which I will be completely honest, I thought that was a place that like the 8-year-old boys in my primary school made up, until I found out it was a real place, probably only a few years ago from talking to other travelers. But anyway, so this is in South America. This is on the border between Peru and Bolivia. It looks absolutely beautiful, looks absolutely stunning. But again, this is a place I do not know much about. It's one of the ones I haven't been to. South America is a part of the world that I have completely unexplored. It's on my list eventually. But yeah, so if you have been there, I'm very, very curious. But I do know that Peru, especially because you've got the Inca Trail, and what do they call it? Oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name. But you know that really place that everybody wants to go to in Peru, right? It's meant to be a very sacred site as well. Okay, then you have the solar plexus center of the Earth. This is one I have been to. So this is said to be Uluru and Katajuda, which is a national park in the very, very center of Australia. So I have no idea what episode it would be, but because I went there in 2021, I went there in approximately September of 2021. So potentially I have a travel podcast that talks about my trip there. But it was really, really interesting. So this was a trip that I tried to make about 3 or 4 times. I think I booked it, and then it got canceled during COVID, and then I booked it and it got canceled again. No, the third time it was like I was meant to go with friends and then didn't end up going with them. So I ended up actually just like last minute being like, do you know what? I'm just going to book a last minute like tour, and ended up having the most incredible time. But this is the, so we refer to Uluru as the heart of Australia. So it's literally if you've never heard of it or never seen pictures, you can Google it, but it's just like a huge red rock. Like when I say huge, I mean massive. Pretty much in the dead center of Australia. This is a place of huge sacred significance to the Aboriginal peoples of Australia. And only in the last, was it 2019? Way too recently, people were forbidden from climbing Uluru. Because, yeah, a place like this, you should not be climbing all over. And also it's just like super, 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 super offensive to the spirits and the land spirits of the, original people of the land. So that's very happy. But yeah, so there is a huge energy there. And what's really interesting, and I should have looked this up before I started this episode, but I remember, so we got to have part of my tour was that we had a local guide, like we had an Aboriginal person come in and do like the storytelling for a lot of the sacred sites that we went to on this tour, which was incredible. And I know the story at Uluru goes, it's about like a war between two snakes. And that's really interesting because like the snakes are also like, associated with these like lines, right? These lines. So the fact that it was kind of like the story was there was two snakes from different lands. So it's like, is that a story of these two snakes meeting at this like hugely central energetic point? I don't know, just postulating here. All right, so that's the solar plexus. And then you have the heart center. Here we move over to England. And this is said to be like Glastonbury, Shaftesbury, and Stonehenge. So this is that whole part of like, what would you say, like East, Middle East England? No, is it West? Yeah, it's West. Sorry. But this is another one that I've been to. Just a couple of weeks ago, I went to Stonehenge. And again, you can listen to my episode on that. It was a hugely, like a lot of energy is still present in these areas, even though the sites, like the sacred sites themselves, like Stonehenge, for example, and Avebury, and there are like other stone circles and just places of cultural and just like energetic significance in this part of England too. Even though a lot of those, whatever we want to call them, like stone circles, temples, whatever they are, whatever they represent, have not been used really for, at least like 1,000 years or more. There's still a lot of like energetic residue there. And could that be because of these lines? It's like these lines are never shutting down, even if the temples, churches, places of worship or whatever built upon them are not used. Again, curious. All right, throat center. For this, you have three separate places. And what's really interesting about this, okay, so you have the Pyramid of Giza, Mount Sinai, which is in Egypt. Pyramids of Giza are obviously also in Egypt, and the Mount of Olives, which is in Jerusalem, in Israel. Now, what's really interesting is that if you map these three sites onto a map, I guess, like if you like kind of like, I guess, like draw a triangle around them, they create this triangle. And the triangle is often associated with the throat center, the throat chakra. So interesting stuff. So I haven't been to Giza, I haven't been to the pyramids. Again, it's on my list. But I have been to the Mount of Olives and in Jerusalem. And I technically, it's not like I've climbed Mount Sinai, but I have been to the coast. If you stood on Mount Sinai and you walked exactly east, I have been to that coast, Dahab. So do you know what? I'm going to count it. So I've been to that part of the Red Sea. So each of these obviously has like a huge historical significance, pyramids being associated with Egypt, the ancient Egyptians, and still again being said to be like huge energetic vortexes and places of healing and all of that. Mount Sinai, now am I going to get this right? I believe I am. Yes, I am. Okay, again, I have been told all of this stuff by Jewish families. Mount Sinai was the place on which Moses is said to have received the Ten Commandments. And then the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. So this is a huge Jewish cemetery. So this was one of my favorite places that I went to when I was in Jerusalem because I am a weird Scorpio and cemeteries are the best thing in the world. But this is one of the world's oldest and biggest cemeteries. There are said to be over 150,000 people buried there, and some of the oldest graves are from like 3,000 plus years ago. Fascinating. And like some of the people buried there would be names you'd recognize from the Bible, allegedly. Fascinating. But anyway, so, oh, and then the Mount of Olives as well. So at the base of the Mount of Olives is where Jesus is said to have kind of like been like put through pain prior to his actual crucifixion. So it is a huge pilgrimage site for Jewish people, obviously, and also for Christians. And the Mount of Olives overlooks the Temple Mount, which is probably the most hotly debated religious site in the world, which both Muslim people and Jewish people are essentially at war over, who has claim to, whose God lives at the top of this mountain. It's still in contention to today. This is, again, a thousands of year old war. But yes, okay, so in terms of these places, yeah, I definitely did feel quite a lot of energy at Mount of Olives. It was also nearly 50 degrees Celsius when I was there, so I wasn't really able to focus as much, but the cemetery was really good. I definitely felt, I did the walk that Jesus is said to have done, like, on the way to his crucifixion, so that was really, really, like, that moved me. That physically moved my body. And again, I've spoken before, I'm not Christian, I'm not Catholic, but I have started to work with, like, some Jesus in my practice, and yeah, that was a lot. Okay, the Mind's Eye, or the Ajna Center, is said to be Glastonbury, so this one is an interesting one. You'll be like, Heather, we spoke about Glastonbury for the Throat Center. Well, my friends, this particular energy center is said to move as the Earth's poles move, right? Again, so I don't know. This is the thing. I couldn't find who created this, who brought this into being. So take everything with a grain of salt. The number one thing I take away from it is that I do feel big, 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 big energy when I've been to these places, right? Okay. And so, yes, at the moment, it is said to be Glastonbury, maybe in 10,000 years or so, from what I understand, it's going to move to somewhere in Brazil. So again, this is one that I have been to, so we can tick that off. And since I, well, oh my goodness, I do not plan to be around in 10,000 years. Yeah, don't have to worry about going to Brazil. Just kidding, Brazil. I will absolutely come to your beautiful country at some point. And finally, we have one again that I don't know much about. That is the Crown Center, and that is said to be in Tibet, Mount Kailash. So yeah, apparently this is the, like, the actual, like, the crown, because it is the highest, or, like, it's like the tallest mountain or something like that, which is interesting because I thought Everest was, but maybe Everest is the tallest one you could climb. Or maybe it's like a technical thing. Either way, there you have it. So again, if you look through these places, they all have a really long historical significance. And if you have ever been to one of them, or, you know, another place in the world that is said to have a really, really strong energetic vibration, then you know there's something to it, right? You know there's something there. You know there's something in the witchy travel. Okay. Now, a couple of other things I want to talk about. To me, all travel is sacred, right? I think this is something that needs to be said, is that no matter where you go, no matter where you're going, it is significant to someone, or has been significant to someone across history. And so you don't need to go to these, like, energetically, like, potent or, like, famous places in order to feel something. I enjoy going to these places because, again, they usually have, like, a lot of historical significance. They usually have a lot of good stories attached to them and all of that. But I've had just as good a time traveling to places that are not so well known, like, oftentimes even more, when you just surprise yourself and you're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. It's like that day that I was talking about that we had in England, where we went to Glastonbury, we went to Stonehenge. No, we didn't go to Glastonbury. We went to Stonehenge, we went to Avebury, we went to these places that my inner witch had been longing to go. And then our tour guide randomly took us to this tiny small town where a bunch of the houses were used for filming Harry Potter. And I was like, this is just as exciting, right? This is just as cool. Okay, so that's a silly example, but there you go. So any place where you travel, you can connect to the energies, you can connect to the land spirits. This is actually, I'm glad I said this, because this is a little piece of travel advice that I wanted to give. If you are doing energy work of any kind and you are traveling, always, always, always before you do anything. So this is kind of like my first things that I do when I arrive in a new place that I'm going to be staying for a while, or a place where I'm going to be working in any way, shape or form, like, because obviously what I do is a lot of energy work. I connect to the land spirits. I let them know who I am. I see if they would like an offering of some kind. Especially even if you just do like grounding meditations and some or anything like that, right? If you think about it like this, when you are grounding, you are asking the earth to support you. You are usually going to be like connecting your energy to the earth's. And so it's very nice to just introduce yourself to the new part of earth that you find yourself on first. So that was just a little tidbit there. But these are just little ways that you can connect to the energy of the earth wherever you are, whenever you're traveling, and also just be respectful to the spirits of the land that you are on. Okay. All right, so the next thing we want to talk about when it comes to witchy or like energetic travel, like, just be respectful of the culture when you are traveling to sacred sites, especially, like, always obviously, but especially when it's not from your lineage. So the example that I wanted to give here was just because I am an Australian and I have been to Bali a few times. And it's really, really, really just so bad to see, a lot of just either Australians and Europeans as well traveling to Bali. And, you know, this is the culture, like, there, and like Indonesia as well as a whole. There are quite a few waterfalls in Indonesia where there are signs up, like, at the waterfalls saying, like, don't wear a bikini, you know, like, don't be naked, like, wear like t-shirt and shorts, like, if you're going to go in the water, like, it's fine to go in the water, just be like conservative in your dress. And then people are like just completely blatantly ignoring that. And, you know, I understand where people think they're coming from when they're doing things like this, which is like, oh, you know, like, if you have religious trauma around like your sexuality and things like that, being like, no, I'm free, like, I don't have to listen to, but also, this is not your place of worship. Like, you've come to another country, this is not your culture. And if they say, like, it is respectful to our land spirits, it is respectful to the spirits of this waterfall, to be dressed, it is respectful to our culture to wear a t-shirt and shorts when you go in the water, then do that. Same as there are a few places in the Northern Territory in Australia, where, again, there are signs, or like, if you speak to any local person, any local guide, they will say, you can swim in this part of the river, don't swim in that part of the river. Not just because there might be crocodiles or whatever, but because the spirits of that particular river do not like you swimming there, or just the local people just find that river to, like, have that river very, very sacred. It's like, don't do it. And then you still see people swimming, and it's just like, oh my goodness, like, do you even understand how blessed and how lucky you are to get to go to these places? This really works me up. Like, this makes me really, really angry when I see this, and the fact that people just don't understand this and don't think about this, like, it really does break my heart. And I also just think, like, you're also taking a risk. Like, you know, it's like one thing if you like don't believe in like spirits and stuff like that, but if you are someone who, you know, has a connection to your spirituality and is still like blatantly ignoring the wishes of this particular culture, and like they say this is a sacred place and these spirits do not like you swimming in this river, and then you still do, okay, enjoy the curse, like, whatever, like, you're bringing it on yourself, right? So anyway, that's just that. So just be respectful, be aware of where you are. If you don't know what the customs or beliefs are, just err on the side of caution. So even just little things, like, just as I've been traveling through Europe, right, obviously going to a lot of churches, and a lot of the ones in Italy will prefer for you to cover your shoulders and just like cover your knees or whatever, just dress modestly, dress respectfully as you go in the church. Again, it's not my culture. I'm lucky enough to be viewing these beautiful, stunning churches, so obviously I'm going to do that. But then, like, there are other places in Europe where they're just like, whatever, I don't care. But if I didn't know, or if the signage wasn't clear, then I will just take a scarf anyway. Take something to cover my shoulders anyway. Okay, so that's that little rant done. All right, let's talk about making pilgrimage, and then we'll talk about astrogeography, and then we'll close up for the day. All right, so a pilgrimage is essentially, it's a very specific type of travel. It's travel that is usually going to a place that has either religious or spiritual significance for you. You can also see pilgrimage as just a journey that you're taking that has like more inner spiritual significance. So you could be going to a place that is not necessarily like classically spiritual, but you're going there because you're planning to reflect on your own inner world or something like that. Like, I would still consider that a pilgrimage, and a lot of people would too. There are obviously some very famous pilgrimage sites throughout the world, depending on what belief system or what religion or whatever that you are from. Obviously the Holy Land, like Jerusalem and that, is going to be a huge pilgrimage site for both Jewish people and also Christian people with the Jesus stuff that went down there. I went to a very popular pilgrimage site in Malta, in northern Malta, which was a almost 2,000 year old pilgrimage site for the Madonna, or like the Mary and the Child. That place was oof. Yeah, that was like, so basically you go down these stairs. It's just on the side of the road. You're just like walking down the road in Malta, and you see this like Madonna and the Child sign, and you're like, okay, I'll check it out. And then you walk down these stairs and you enter this cave, and there's like your statue. And the air was thick with prayer. Like, that is the only way I can describe it. Like, it was like, you were breathing in thousands of years of reverence. Again, it like nearly brought me to tears. It was so beautiful. So yeah, there are lots and lots of places like that. I was reading about a place in France, where the Mother Mary is said to have appeared, like in a kind of hologram type thing a few times in the 1800s. And that town is now a spiritual, like a really famous spiritual site. And then you have your walking pilgrimages. I can't remember, there's a massive one in Spain. My friend did it when, anyway, so there's a big walk in Spain that's like a pilgrimage. But there are tons, right? And again, a pilgrimage is what you make it. So for me, it's usually just like I read about a place or I hear about a place and I'm like, ooh, that feels really fascinating to my soul. Like, that feels like I want to go there. That feels like my spirit wants to experience something that is residing there, that I want to feel some of the energy that's in that place, right? So each of those is a pilgrimage. So pilgrimages are essentially places where you go, again, they're trips that you take that has like a religious or spiritual resonance or like meaning for you. Okay, and it is a really, really, really lovely way to travel. There's no right or wrong way to do it. I guess if you are doing it, you're probably going to put a little bit more thought or intention into it than a regular trip. But you know, any place that you feel called to, like if you are like, oh, also just like all of the travel that I've done around Greece and stuff like that was all pilgrimage because, you know, I worship the Hellenic gods. So a lot of that was visiting their ancient temples or sites associated with them and so on and so forth, right? So if in your spirituality you come across a place and you're like, oh, that's calling to me, like I feel like I want to experience something that's there, I feel like there's something there for me, yes, you can absolutely make pilgrimage there. Again, be respectful of both the land spirits and also the people and the actual cultural site itself. You know, goes without saying, but don't take little bits of it home. If you are leaving offerings, then make them biodegradable, like nature friendly, all of that stuff, right? Just be a good human. Okay, so finally, let's talk about astrogeography. So this is a part of astrology that I've been intending to study like more deeply for so long. I mean, it literally mixes travel with astrology, which is just heather all over. And I'm finally getting deeper into it. So I'm definitely not an expert yet and, you know, not like up to offering services just yet, but I'm getting way deeper into it. So we're just going to talk about it just a little bit in general. But basically, astrogeography is this idea that, you know how you have your birth chart, right? And then you have a map of the world. And imagine you put the two together, right? So you have a map of the world and you layer your birth chart pretty much on top of it. And what comes out is these lines. So you get these planetary lines that crisscross, much like ley lines, but definitely not the same thing, that cross all over the world. So you could kind of think of it, but don't take this literally, but you could start to kind of think of it as your personal ley lines, right? But each of these lines, these planetary lines, is associated with a specific planet, and therefore it's associated with a specific part of you or part of your life or energy. So you're going to have a Jupiter line, you're going to have a Saturn line, you're going to have a Chiron line, you're going to have a Venus line, Sun line, Moon line, Pluto line, all of that. And these are going to be like going over the world. And so if there is a particular place, like this could be a really extra, like a really nice extra little thing to do if you are thinking about like doing pilgrimage somewhere, or taking a spiritually inclined trip, whether that's like a retreat you're looking at booking or whatever it is, even if you're just going on a like personal trip or even if you're taking a family trip, right? Check out what are your lines there, if any. So you can do this on astro.com. So when you go onto astro.com and you look for the free horoscopes on the side, is that where it is? Let me just double check. Yeah, so you click on free horoscopes in the drop down menu and you'll see locational astrology. And then you just click on AstroClick Travel. And as long as you've already got your chart in there, you just have to click your name and click go. And you're going to get a map of the world and it's going to have these colorful lines going over it. And you can use the drop-down menu to like zoom in on the specific part of the world that you want to focus on. So if you were planning a trip to, let's say, South America, you would select that. So you're zooming in on South America and you can see like for example, me, let's see, what do we got? I don't think I've looked at South America before, but going through Bolivia, I have a Neptune line. Literally going right through where that, was it the sacral chakra of the earth is my Uranus line, right? So that could be something really interesting. I actually live on my Neptune and Uranus line, like back in Melbourne, as well. So that's really interesting. Oh, actually, no, sorry. I'm looking at my friend Alyssa. Ignore everything I just said, but my friend Alyssa has her Neptune and Uranus line going through the sacral center of the earth, being Lake Titicaca. That's right. Very interesting stuff. So how you can use astrogeography other than just like getting curious, right? So if you wanted to, let's say you wanted to take a trip or travel somewhere for a specific purpose, like if you were doing a book writing trip, like let's say you're trying to write a book and you're having a lot of trouble focusing at home, you could be like, well, I want to do a creative retreat. Like I want to just like lock myself in a cabin in the woods and just write for 6 weeks straight. Where would you go? You could look at your astro cartography map, and you could find, let's say, your Mercury line, since Mercury is all about communication and all of that stuff. And then you could see, okay, like what places that I would actually want to go to are on my Mercury line. And you might be nicely surprised. You'd be like, oh, if I just fly like 3 hours west to this town that I've always been curious about, that would be my Mercury line. Now there are of course like caveats to this, because if in your chart Mercury is like, for me, example, okay, so in my birth chart, this is where you're not just taking into account your astrocartography chart, you're also taking into account your birth chart. But like in my birth chart, Mercury is conjunct Pluto, right? So Mercury and communication and all of that, it's always like just got a bit of a Plutonian tinge to it. So it's not always the easiest, simple, like clear communication thing. Like Pluto tends to, occasionally like repress things and things like that. So if I didn't know how to work with my Mercury-Pluto conjunction, which I think I'm learning, I think I've learned, done a pretty good job of, then I might be a bit hesitant. I might see that and be like, I don't know, like Mercury's a bit tricky. Like maybe we should instead go for a sun line, seeing as your sun line, maybe if you had the sun in like a positive part of your birth chart and it's really, really happy thing for you, then maybe your sun lines will just bring out this like creativity and sunshiny and, you know, like, you'll really be able to tap into that like solar creative life force energy when you're on your sun line, and that's going to be what's going to help you write that book. So it's not like there's one specific right way to do that. And you could also think like, let's say you're writing a book on love, right? You might look at the Venus line, because being on your Venus line is going to put you in that lovey, romantic, like relating to everything type of vibration. So there's no one right way to do it. But it is really, really, really interesting. And it's pretty standard. It's not like the planets change, right? It's like whatever, like if you've studied astrology at all, whatever the sun represents in astrology, that's what it represents, you know, generally in an astrocartography chart. But there are then caveats you need to take into account, like what's happening with this sun in my birth chart, because that's going to impact what's happening wherever I am. And then also people that you're traveling with. So if you're not traveling solo, and maybe you have really, really good planetary lines in, let's say, West Virginia, but you're traveling with your partner and they have like Saturn, or they have Chiron, or one of those tougher planetary lines going through West Virginia, obviously that's going to impact the trip you have. Because if they're a sad sack, or if they're having terrible Saturnian blockages or whatever it is, right, that's going to impact you. That's going to impact your trip. So again, there's a lot to take into account, but if you are also someone who's interested in travel, and particularly like sacred travel and all of that stuff, then yeah, it's definitely something to get into and get curious about. Okay, wow, what an episode. We got to talk about some of my favorite things. I'm actually not tired at all. I feel like if I ever record close to an hour or like over an hour, I'm absolutely exhausted by the end, but I feel good. That was fun. I could keep talking. What else do we want to talk about? But no. So if you have any questions about anything we spoke about, I can always do like a follow-up episode on spiritual travel, magical travel, witchy travel, all of that. I mean, one day, it is definitely one of my long-term dreams when I recover from this burnout / illness, whatever, to host trips, to be like a tour guide, but like a witchy tour guide, and just go to witchy places and do witchy things and, you know, be on our own inner pilgrimages, but also together, while at the same time learning about the local customs and local beliefs. Oh my goodness, we forgot to do fun facts with Heather. Okay, well, all right. Well, I can't remember the rest of the fun facts I was going to tell you. I'll save the rest for next time, because I'd have to look up my little Word document where I can keep them all. But I'll just tell you the one I remember. Did you know, here's a fun fact. Did you know that the plant yarrow, and maybe everybody knows this, but I didn't know this, the plant yarrow, it's like a Latin name is, let me pronounce it correctly. Oh no. Is Achillea. And this is because it's named after Achilles. And it is like part of the Achilles mythology, like one of the Achilles potential mythology, is that Achilles' mum would bathe him in yarrow to make him invincible. Fascinating. Fascinating. The more you know. Fun facts with Heather. We'll hopefully return next week if I remember to do it before I get into the episode. Okay. Big love. You guys know where to find me, on Instagram, on my website, all services and that are listed should be by now. And always thinking of you. Big love. Bye.